The Milanese still regarded them as a mere rabble of brigands, accustomed invariably to flee before the troops of his imperial and royal majesty. So much, at least, was reported to them, 3 times weekly, by a little news sheet no bigger than one's hand and printed on soiled paper. In the Middle Ages, the Republicans of Lombardy had given proof of a valour equal to that of the French, and deserved to see their city razed to the ground by the German emperors. Since they had become loyal subjects, their great occupation was the printing of sonnets upon handkerchiefs of rose-coloured taffeta whenever the marriage occurred of a young lady belonging to some rich or noble family. 2 or 3 years after that great event in her life, the young lady in question used to engage a devoted admirer. Sometimes the name of the cicisbeo, chosen by the husband's family, occupied an honourable place in the marriage contract. It was a far cry from these effeminate ways to the profound emotions aroused by the unexpected arrival of the French army. Presently, there sprang up a new and passionate way of life. A whole people discovered on the 15th of May 1796 that everything which until then it had respected was supremely ridiculous, if not actually hateful. The departure of the last Austrian regiment marked the collapse of the old ideas. To risk one's life became the fashion. People saw that in order to be really happy after centuries of cloying sensations, it was necessary to love one's country with a real love and to seek out heroic actions. They had been plunged in the darkest night by the continuation of the jealous despotism of Charles V and Philip II. They overturned these monarchs' statues and immediately found themselves flooded with daylight. For the last half century, as the Encyclopedia and Voltaire gained ground in France, the monks had been dinning into the ears of the good people of Milan that to learn to read, or for that matter to learn anything at all, was a great waste of labour, and that by paying one's exact tithe to one's parish priest and faithfully reporting to him all one's little misdeeds, one was practically certain of having a good place in paradise. To complete the debilitation of this people, once so formidable and so rational, Austria had sold them on easy terms the privilege of not having to furnish any recruits to her army. In 1796, the Milanese army was composed of 24 rapscallions dressed in scarlet, who guarded the town with the assistance of 4 magnificent regiments of Hungarian grenadiers. Freedom of morals was extreme, but passion very rare. Otherwise, apart from the inconvenience of having to repeat everything to one's parish priest on pain of ruin even in this world, the good people of Milan were still subjected to certain little monarchical interferences which could not fail to be vexatious. For instance, the Archduke, who resided at Milan and governed in the name of the Emperor his cousin, had had the lucrative idea of trading in corn. In consequence, an order prohibiting the peasants from selling their grain until His Highness had filled his granaries. In May 1796, 3 days after the entry of the French, a young painter in miniature, slightly mad, named Gros, afterwards famous, who had come with the army, overhearing in the great Café des Servi, which was then in fashion, an account of the exploits of the Archduke, who moreover was extremely stout, picked up the list of ices which was printed on a sheet of coarse yellow paper. On the back of this, he drew the fat Archduke. A French soldier was stabbing him with his bayonet in the stomach, and instead of blood, there gushed out an incredible quantity of corn. What we call a lampoon or caricature was unknown in this land of crafty despotism. The drawing left by Gros on the table of the Café des Servi seemed a miracle fallen from heaven. It was engraved and printed during the night, and next day 20,000 copies of it were sold. The same day there were posted up notices of a forced loan of 6 millions levied to supply the needs of the French army, which, having just won 6 battles and conquered 10 provinces, wanted nothing now but shoes, breeches, jackets, and caps. The mass of prosperity and pleasure which burst into Lombardy in the wake of these French ragamuffins was so great that only the priests and a few nobles were conscious of the burden of this levy of 6 millions, shortly to be followed by a number of others. These French soldiers laughed and sang all day long. They were all under 25 years of age, and their commander-in-chief, who had reached 27, was reckoned the oldest man in his army. This gaiety, this youthfulness, this irresponsibility furnished a jocular reply to the furious preachings of the monks, who for 6 months had been announcing from the pulpit.